Hello, and welcome to our Digital Dialogue series, where we'll be learning from some wonderful folks about relationships to land, food sovereignty, and Indigenous land repatriation. My name is Lauren, and I'm part of a collective of settler and Indigenous researchers, food activists, farmers, and teachers who have made this series possible. In today's episode, I'm really grateful to be speaking with Melissa West Morrison. Melissa has one foot in cedar and another in bamboo. She is passionate about growing culturally relevant food and making medicines on her lifelong journey of learning the language of plants. Melissa is Nungis and Chinese and has a background in facilitating intergenerational educational programming and community-based research projects related to Indigenous rematriation and Indigenous food security, while increasing knowledge of and access to traditional plants and foods. She is a community artist, UBC alumni, and recent graduate of the Tsawwassen First Nation Farm School. Melissa has also recently embarked on learning her ancestral language of Kwakwala and is the nursery coordinator at the Coast Salish Plant Nursery at the Maplewood Flats. Thanks so much to Melissa for speaking with me today and to you, listener, for tuning in.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Melissa. It's so lovely to see you. And I'm looking forward to our conversation today. So to start, I'm wondering if you could just tell me a little bit about yourself and who you are.
I'm kind of excited. This will be my first time kind of sharing. I'm taking a Kwakwala Ligwala language course. And so we're learning how to introduce ourselves in a good way in our language. So I'll start off with that and do an English kind of reiteration of that after. So, Nugoyam Gaaxislas, Blue Chichi, Melissa Klum, Keepman Umpi, George West Morrison, Keepman Umpi, Florence Morrison, Keepman Ni Nula Tamara, Gayutlin La Yalis, Glue Yutning, Glue Toishan, Gayutlin Laha Namgis, Guklian La Nolsi. So, yeah, Gaelic Isla, hello. My Kwakwala name is Gaaxislas. It means one who serves breakfast. It was given to me by a really strong, intellectually fierce Kwakwala language revitalizer. She was also a museum curator and community activist and Namgis elder, Gloria Cramner Webster. And during Bodig's burning of the mass potlatch back in our big house, in 2012, and my Cantonese name, KK, it means something that's kind of twinkly, shiny, and it was given to me by my popo, my grandmother on my mother's side. And kind of with my intros, I often say that I've got one foot in cedar and another in bamboo. I'm Kwakwak and Chinese. I've been born and raised on the unceded, occupied, and traditional territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. On my father's side, I come from the West family, the Namgis First Nations. We have our roots in the Nimkish Valley. And on my mother's side, I come from the Low family, where our relations trace back to Canton, as well as the villages of Yuetming, Toishan, China. And my pronouns are she, her, and hers.
Thanks so much. That was beautiful. Thank you for sharing. And I guess I'm moving forward and jumping right into the conversation. Our first question is, what does rematriation mean to you? Or is there a different term you prefer to use?
Yeah, that's something I've been really thinking about. And I was asking my kind of language teachers, kind of, do we have that kind of translation back? And it's more of when I was thinking about rematriation and really thinking about kind of this idea of kind of kinship and that relationality. And when I kind of look at the practices or ways that I kind of do land-based work, I often think about kind of my own relationship to the matriarchs in my life. And for me, I think about my blood memory, and my father's side were intergenerational survivors of the St. Michael's Residential School. And my father is a part of the 60 Scoop, and his mother passed away all too young in her when he was a teenager. And I think about how I was dreamed into this world by my mother, who came from head taxpayers, but then weaves together through a blend of Chinese takeout restaurants that were owned and operated by my grandparents and the general store and laundromat that my mother spent her childhood growing up in, and thinking about these stories of strength and love from, yeah, father who lost his mother too young, and his dad who was a fisherman that carried a lot of pain and spent most of his time at sea. And so when I think about the word concepts of rematriation, I look at kind of my own relationships to the sacred and to the source and connection to home and in relationality of coming from multiple worlds, and what that means to oftentimes when I was in university, we often talked about the world, the word more to repatriate. Mm-hmm. And in Kwakola, we have this word called umasta, and it means the return of something important, or as well as through raids, our peoples were kind of returned back. And in this idea of to return of something important, Gloria Cremner Webster, the elder who I mentioned earlier, who gifted me my name, was sharing with me that this idea of to rematriate, we can also conceptualize that into the return of knowledge, the return of our culture, return of our people. And when I think of to rematriate, I really think the interconnectedness of that. And oftentimes it's kind of decentering patriarchy and kind of these notions of often our communities that were centered matriarchally. And yeah, so it's like a long-winded world, and I think I'm getting into different subjects, but these answers are just, yeah, this definition is more of like, it's a living, breathing relationship. It's not an ideology, but an embodiment. I look at this idea of rematriation and the relationship to kinship, to community, to plants, to the land. And I think they're just so interconnected that it's hard to give one definition without really this protocol of understanding how to rematriate. I very find it like localized into community, to place, in our relationship, and situating ourselves into our responsibilities of those roles and processes, and to live in that way. So I don't know if I answered the question, but
no, that was great. Thank you. And I guess even just thinking a bit further and thinking about the embodiment of rematriation in particular places, what does that look like for you in practice or day-to-day life?
I think for me, how I really understand to rematriate is kind of unpacking my own relationship to myself, to community, to my family. And to rematriate, it's a lifelong decolonial love journey, I find, with myself, in community, and with plants. And for me, I really kind of center rematriation as kind of through the work I do, but how I show up every day. And for me, that has been through the lenses of working with seeds. So oftentimes there's big concepts like seed sovereignty or food security, food sovereignty. And for me, like my first steps around rematriation kind of began with, my own role to how food has been that offering or bridge for my two worlds to have come together of my own family and the witnesses, to be a witness to the pillar and guidance to shine light around the power of plants that have been in the ancestral connections that kind of weave communities really together. Mm. And yeah, I think for me, that's what it kind of looks like is, I think it's like for me, this idea of specifically around seeds is, I think often a lot of indigenous matriarchs and folks working on land-based work kind of center around the return of seeds to their homelands in this interconnectedness of whatever that means in like indigenous, like women or matriarchal identified bodies of that return to the sacred, and they can't be separated. And I think through colonization and through patriarchy systems like Blood Quantum, the Indian Act often tried to take indigenous bodies and queer identified bodies away from the land, and through the roles that both the feminine and masculine energies and dualities and multiple worlds have been to creating this holisticness. And for me, rematriation, the best way I can understand and really kind of elevate and embody is through, yeah, understanding and deepening my language of plants and really being that guidance, because I think for plants, they're queer themselves in how they show up and they produce and pollinate. And that's kind of, yeah, I don't know. I think I'm going into different tunnels, but that's what it kind of rematriate looks like, is me kind of deepening my own relationship to kind of plants and learning on how to use them and the good medicines that have helped me and to help communities of healing. And also, like, I've realized how much through rematriation, to really understand that in a very place-based thing, is to really center also in like language revitalization. Mm-hmm. For me, that's been such a key healing journey, to really learning my Namgis roots is to learn about Kwakula. And so when I talk about rematriation, it's so interconnected that you can't separate language, plants, the land, and the embodiment of those processes. And I think that's really what rematriation is. This idea of returning to the sacred, to Mother Earth, is understanding that kind of kinshipness that we all have, and kind of centering that back in, and yeah, decentering like patriarchy and more hierarchical systems that really don't associate kind of an equalness and how everyone has a role into a kind of embodiment and in living a good way. Yeah.
I really appreciate your articulations of all the different like layers and aspects. And, you know, you can talk about rematriation as a decolonial love journey, as seed sovereignty, as returning back, as language revitalization, as centering kinship, and decentralizing patriarchy and other systems of oppression. And yeah, I really appreciate all those articulations. And I'm wondering, in thinking about that, in thinking about those different articulations, do you see land back and as being connected to, similar or different to, rematriation as well?
Yeah, and I think there's so many different layers of how, yeah, land back has been kind of taken up now. I've seen on either ends and multiple intersections around like land back, these notions of physically returning land to the ownership or to the stewardship or in guidance of Indigenous nations, peoples, and bodies. And then I also see on this other end of more in like in the theory world too, of just that kind of intellectual kind of sovereignty or centering of that knowledge systems coming from Indigenous folks leading those narratives. And for me, when I think about land back, it's the same kind of what I mentioned earlier around land back and kind of rematriation, is like they're just so interconnected. Mm-hmm. And I feel like history has definitely shown, and I guess for me, being an Indigenous mixed woman and how kind of my navigations of even what love looked like growing up and how Blood Quantum played a fact, a lot of that had to do with literally just this idea of through different, like in the so-called Canada, like how different legal systems would literally take away Indigenous rights and acknowledging them as Indigenous peoples as a way by erasing their identities is erasing them from the lands. So not having that direct relationship or seeing them as equals and humans. And I think it just shows like that direct kinship that Indigenous bodies have in the interconnectedness of understanding who we are as peoples, as nations, as communities. It's just so interconnected to the land. And so to have conversations around kind of land back and rematriation, I feel like you have to center on, yeah, the connection to the land, whether that's, and I think that's like centering in that physicalness, but it's also like our understandings about creating like low barrier opportunities for Indigenous bodies to get back to the land, whether that's through plant knowledge, through making like outdoor opportunities, you know, like skiing, hiking, whatever, available. And so I don't know if I answered the question.
No, but that was, yeah. Did, yeah, no, that was perfect. Thank
I
think you.
I just deep into different areas.
That's why these conversations are so wonderful and rich. So no, I really appreciate that. And I think, you know, building on some of the things that you've said in terms of relationships with land and plants and seeds, in what ways do you see rematriation relating to food sovereignty or not? How are the two interconnected or different?
For me, I think I've just, yeah, I see them so interconnected. A lot of like rematriation, and so your question is around rematriation and seed sovereignty, is that correct?
Food sovereignty, but we can go seed sovereignty is, I mean, I'm happy to go there too. So whatever you feel with, feel like going with, I'm very happy.
Well, for me, I look at it both like rematriation, food sovereignty, seed sovereignty. I look at that, and my lens growing up has always been led by matriarchs. Mm-hmm. And I look at my direct relationship to my to my mother, and her relationship to my popo, her mom. And it's always centered around food. Our whole relationship, knowledge has been transferred through culturally, language, through protocol, like what community means, what family means, traditions. And having both my Kokwakiwak and my Chinese side have all have been brought together through food. And so I look at often the work that I do in land-based work in community, and it's still centered around matriarchs. And I think that's often when we talk about kind of traditional or whatever those roles historically and continued past like colonization, and what even shows up now is often matriarchs leading those dialogues. And I think for me, what I'm really trying to push and center is also kind of like having these matriarchs that are these knowledge keepers around how to harvest, how to process, like jam, cook, make salves, and the things that really are that kind of good medicines that really keep communities together. I think the next level that I'm trying to deepen in the connection of rematriation and kind of food sovereignty is really kind of decentering the hierarchicalness of these structures in a larger context, because I feel like these knowledge keepers are the ones who are sitting around in this kitchen table talk, who have all the knowledge and power on that. But when we talk about larger systems, they're often still very much like white-led patriarchal folks who are leading these greater topics. So for me, I look at rematriation and food sovereignty so interconnected, but there's also kind of this elephant in the room of how can we also center and hold up Indigenous like or BIPOC matriarchs in power structural positions to kind of decenter these institutions away from patriarchy. So that's kind of that level that I've been kind of dabbling at, especially around food sovereignty, is just realizing still how kind of, yeah, racist and not, yeah, what's that word? Not accessible, and very much still structurally done in ways of to colonize bodies, to colonize our understandings and connections to land, harvest, to hunt, to process. Mm. And for me, that's kind of that next level where I'm thinking about that interconnectedness of if we don't really center rematriation in the work of matriarchs kind of leading this, it really just shows that level of where food sovereignty on that kind of micro level can go to, but also in this larger discussions of historically of what kind of the roles rematriation of why we're doing this movement or this push when traditionally it's always and will continue to exist. Mm-hmm. So that language in that scholarly sense is now like kind of, yeah, putting that out and just in the work that I've been doing in communities, yeah, not seeing those representations of matriarchs in the higher positions, but trying to find ways now of centering in that. And that's probably, yeah, through that question about you're asking around rematriation and kind of introducing or reintroducing those languages that were always embodied, they just weren't centered. So, yeah.
And would you talk a little bit too about seed sovereignty more specifically? I know it's all interrelated, but I'm really interested to hear your perspective on that as well, on that relationship between rematriation and seed sovereignty.
Yeah, I think this idea that I'm deepening it in more and learning about, that's something that I'm still trying to learn more about in more of my like West Coast Kukwala kind of sense. I've learned a lot of more about rematriation through like Rowan White and other like seed keepers more back east. And I was just kind of thinking also about this idea of rematriation, though it's something that I've kind of learned, witnessed, and started to participate is this idea of kind of what I mentioned about the Umasa, this idea of return home, return back. And about, if we look about seeds and through the histories of like colonization, through the displacement of like food security and like traditional food sources, that was kind of the centering in of like first contact. If you take away people's access to their traditional foods, you start to realize that food has been the center and gathering place of how knowledge is transferred, ways of how to live in a good way, to be protocols, how like ceremonies and practices were able to be done. And so for me, this idea and really embodiment of practice of seed rematriation is kind of centering back in those practices, but also just on how to like be Bakwam. And Bakwam just means like kind of like an indigenous person. And so that's kind of like, there's a saying called Bakwam love. And it's just like this idea of, yeah, I see that so interconnected, because it's really, it's like that love story I'll go back to. And it's like seed rematriation for me is like really, how can we nurture and hold up those love journeys of bringing back our seeds, or how one of my friends was telling me around seed maturation, they literally started through like even Instagram channels, people were like DMing and doing seed tradings and through this virtual webs and mailing, and trying to really unpack how often when we think about like farming and agricultural work, like indigenous bodies were often not considered a part of those processes. And through like first contact, like when we talk about this idea of like terra nullius, right, the Latin word for just empty lands, right? That was like an opportunity for colonizers when they first arrived, was a way of like, oh, if you're not kind of farming or maintaining a land in the ways that we practice, you're not human, you are not actually like, this land is empty, it's free to use. And I think that really just shows those ways of understanding the deep connection that indigenous bodies had to land. And by severing those connections and erasing those realities, that's why I look at seed rematriation as a key, by returning and welcoming back our seeds that have been in dormant or have been like passed down, often in hiding or waiting for the opportunities for that knowledge to come. The seeds themselves are the knowledge keepers that have it, and they've been waiting for us to be in that good way, in that good heart, to be able to be open to those knowledges to center in again. So yeah, I like a like seed rematriation as at work as living relatives, like this idea of coming back home and back to their motherlands and communities and kind of centering the maternal connections that we all have to Mother Earth. And often it, these bundles or seeds are carried by women or women identified bodies. And that's when like seed songs and ceremonies are kind of being shared again. And I think that all comes back to those bundles. Yeah, that, I don't know. I think I'm rambling now. So
I mean, all this really ties into the next question that I wanted to ask, which is about responsibilities. And I mean, you've already articulated, I think, some of the answer to this question throughout our conversation so far, but I'm wondering, you know, what kinds of responsibilities do different communities have in relation to rematriation, and what do those responsibilities look like?
I think when often we talk about seed rematriation, and right now I think a lot of people across Turtle Island, like this idea of like, I guess for me, I'll start again, when I think about the times that we're living in now, and often these terminologies like reconciliation get thrown around, and oftentimes these apologies or these Latin acknowledgements, and these kind of often were at times, yeah, pivotal moments of just even recognition was so hard to have to begin with. But now we're getting past that to a point of what does that mean in practice? And so when I kind of think about, yeah, wait, you gotta ask, what was your question? I gotta be more specific or I'll start rambling.
No, it's all very much appreciated, and
oh, the
roles. But the question was, yeah, what kinds of responsibilities do different communities have, and what do those look like?
Okay, so yeah, I'll go back to, okay, so the roles that I see it have, and I think for me, like, if I often talk about my family, it's like, how do we live in a good way? And I feel like everyone, our children of Mother Earth, we're all birthed from the soil, from the waters, from the lands that we're from, and we're all interconnected in that way. And so when I talk about the roles and responsibilities specifically around like rematriation, and if I look at it kind of in the context of like food sovereignty or seed sovereignty, I start to see about often when folks talk about reconciliation and this idea of kind of healing through past, like, yeah, folks often say like, I couldn't control the past, I had no participation, but it's an ongoing relationship. And I see that's the same with seed sovereignty, seed rematriation, and the roles and responsibilities that we have in this context is, as we become familiar and deepen our understandings and knowledges of these kind of subjects and embodied and living experiences, it's, what is our role in participating in that? And for me, I look at this idea of my role in rematriation in a context of food security, Indigenous food sovereignty, and seed sovereignty, is I look at like, that's my journey of healing in community. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think about all the work on how that's like a cycle of healing for everyone. It's an immense amount of like intergenerational healing that's happening even in my own family. And for me, that's like the roles and how I show up to friends who are Indigenous or non-Indigenous. It's oftentimes for me to understand what like seed sovereignty has been. One of my closest friends is of English and Irish descent, but I've learned so much about like plant identification through his lived experience and through, yeah, oftentimes more Western science lenses, but you can braid those worlds together. And kind of as, yeah, we talk about climate change, needing those kind of systems together. And that's kind of what I look at it as, these kinshipness. And that's where everyone plays a role, is being kindred spirits, how do we walk each other home in this idea of to the source, to the sacred, to Mother Earth. And that's kind of what I look at, is the roles of what are we called to, what are our strengths, what are our privileges, and how do we kind of use those, recognize those, to elevate other voices and experiences and realities that to make us all more holistically interconnected.
Yeah, totally. And in thinking about that process, are there any particular like values or principles or protocols of rematriation that you haven't already mentioned that you want to highlight?
Let's see, I'm just trying to, I think for me, when I think about protocols, and it's kind of funny, I feel like this word often gets thrown around a lot, and it can be like very overwhelming to folks, or people have no idea, or often can be just used as a way to like top down, this is how you do it without questioning. But I think for me, what I learned about protocol is just, I'll go back to like this idea of like having a good heart. And I think that's for me, this idea of anytime like that you show up, what is your intentions, volitions, like what do you have to offer to bring, or go back to like if you're Indigenous or non-Indigenous in this idea of seed rematriation and in Indigenous context, like what is your intentions of being involved, what kind of privileges do you acknowledge or want to kind of elevate your place in the world to kind of elevate the other voices that didn't have a seat at the table or may not necessarily wanted it, but how you can reshape that so it's more inclusive to everyone. And I kind of look at that in the sense of protocols. It's just, for me, it's like, including elders, knowledge keepers, but it's also, having that humbleness too, knowing that most likely we're all on this healing journey of trying to return to the sacred, return to Mother Earth, return to love. And in this decolonial love journey, it's going to get messy. It can be complicated. You're going to probably fumble, but it's just having a good heart. And I feel like that's just kind of at the center. It's if your intentions is only to show up with love, with nothing wanting back in return, but just to acknowledge the realities, the pain, or the, and to be a part of that healing journey, I feel like that's a protocol of like understanding that you'll probably mess up, but you'll learn. And as long as you're continue to open and you continue to show up in that work, that's the most important. And it's like gardening, I find, and working with seeds. Some of the seeds that you seed save and that you plant will pop up. Others may not, but it may take a bit more time. And that's just what it kind of needs. It's that nurturingness and that spaciousness to grow, to root, grow and blossom. And I think it's just, that's how I really talk about, rematriation and that connection of living in a good way. And it's just that more kinshipness. So, I don't know. That's just some thoughts.
Thank you. Those are actually the end of my questions for today. Do you have anything else that you want to add or thoughts, comments?
I don't know. No, not. I guess just, I just want to say ula kala mula, which means I'm just really grateful. I'm really grateful for the space to kind of share my own journey. I feel like I'm just on this precipice of really turning inwards, and I feel like I'm like this matriarch in training, that I'm just a slow bloomer in, but I'm really on this lifelong journey to of a decolonial love journey with myself and in relation, and I see you as on that with me, walking side by side. And I'm just the word I shared earlier of like Gaelic Isla, which means like a welcome and a thank you. I was shared that it has like origin roots of meaning. Every time you say that to someone, it means I share my breath and spirit with you. And I just want to share that with folks who are also be listening, is this idea of every time that we do interact and talk and hold space for one another to kind of unpack and to deepen in our learnings or unlearnings of subjects, we're continuously sharing our breath and our spirit and giving a bit of ourselves. And I think that's a process of living in that good way, is that protocol is our offerings to one another, and that humbleness and being our best that we can or know we know of. So yeah, I share my breath and spirit with you, and we're interconnected always in this journey. And yeah, I raise my hands up with the work that you are and the matriarch that you are to your family, and the work that you're doing in academia as well and as in community. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Melissa. I feel so honored to be able to talk to you, and so grateful and lucky to be able to connect and reconnect after a while. And I'm really grateful for being able to learn from you and for you to share your knowledge and wisdom and experience with us and in the context of this podcast. So thank you so, so much.
I really want to thank Melissa one more time for sharing your knowledge and wisdom with us today. Thank you so much. It is always so wonderful to hear what you're up to. I'd also like to thank my fellow collaborators and friends, Danielle Boissineau, Taryn Giacomini, Adrian Lickers Xavier, Sarah Rotz, and Ayla Fenton. Thank you also to our research assistants, both past and present, including Stephanie Morningstar, Sonia Hill, and Jessica Ross, as well as Jaren Richards for your fabulous tech support. We'd also like to thank the National Farmers Union Indigenous Solidarity Working Group for their ongoing collaboration and support, and the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council for their funding support. Thanks so much for listening, and hope you tune in again.